up Senate Committee on Business and Transportation for Thursday, April 16th. We're going to begin by opening a work session on Senate Bill 546. Mr. Stemblage, we heard this bill on
April 2nd. Mr. Chairman, you heard this bill on April 2nd. It requires all first-time applicants for a driver's license motorcycle endorsement to complete the motorcycle rider education course. It faces the requirement in beginning January 1st, 2010 through January 1st, 2015, with early requirements for younger riders. And then you have the Dash 2 amendment, which has been distributed previously, which deletes a motorcycle improvement agreement provision, and it deletes the motorcycle endorsement fee increase. You have a fiscal statement on the Dash 2 amendment. It has been issued, and we have a notice of no revenue impact on the Dash 2 amendment.
Okay, Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. I believe we are ready to go on this bill with the Dash 2 amendments. I know that there's been some discussion with Team Oregon about whether we should delay the implementation, you know, do it a little farther out for folks. But they are happy with it. They believe they can meet the capacity quite nicely. And we are working with ODOT to continue to secure a site, a permanent site, in Portland. That's their biggest capacity issue right now, and they're working on they want to purchase a Brownsfield site in Portland. The city of Portland also has its eye on it, but we might be able to grab it as well. So I think we're good to go. And I just wanted to highlight for you, I did send to all of you an email. It was very, very time appropriate, I guess, on April 13th of this week. The Oregonian ran a story about a man and his wife who were out motorcycling. He's a 58-year-old mailman, and he and his wife went out on their Harleys. He had his Harley 2 weeks, and he could not negotiate the curve, and he died. And now the wife is without her life mate. She's put her motorcycle up for sale, and it's quite a tragedy. She had taken the class. He had not. He was scheduled to go in, but he got on his bike before he did that. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there have been 6 motorcycle fatalities on record for 2009 as of Friday last week, and 5 of those were in the first 2 weekends of spring. And so this is really why the training is absolutely critical. Most of these, and we had another fatality last week, I've been told, someone who couldn't negotiate the curve. So again, the training is imperative. I know some people feel like it's a nanny state and we're trying to tell people what to do, but I don't know any other way to tell people, especially those my age, the baby boomers, that, you know, you're not as young as you used to be. You might have ridden a motorcycle when you were younger, but it's a lot different now. There's a lot of things you need to think about, and you really need to take this class before you get out on that motorcycle. So with a neutral position from Bike Pack, one of the largest advocacy groups for bikers, I think this is bodes well. And also, when I sent you the story from the Oregonian, there were comments made by people on the blog who actually were bikers and agreed with this bill. So again, I hope that you can support it. We did. Now we only have the increase in the fee for the endorsement for the first time to help pay for the program. We took out the registration fee that just went to the highway fund. We'll take care of that in another bill. And then the 2 additional questions on the driver's test, which I think is totally appropriate so that people understand what it's like to have a motorcycle out on the highway. Because as this story said, one of the common comments to police officers when they come and investigate an accident like this is the automobile driver says, "I didn't see them." I didn't see them. So my husband has a bumper sticker on his vehicle that says, start seeing motorcycles now. And we really need to educate people about the motorcyclists out on the highway, because there are a lot of us out there now, particularly with the price of gasoline. People are turning to motorcycles as a cheap transportation, new way to transport themselves back and forth to work. And we have doubled our numbers since 1999 of all the motorcyclists on the highway. So I think this is a good bill. I think it's measured, and I think it's appropriate to pass, and I would hope that you would support the Dash 2 amendment.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for Senator Walker? Senator Berger.
Thank you very much. Senator Walker, I don't have a question, but I just want to make a few comments to you about the bill. My district is the destination of motorcycle riders. And as you know, Highway 101 is a two-lane road that goes all the way from Coos Bay in my district to Lincoln City. So on the weekends, beginning now, all through the summer months. So this is a safety issue. You've done a really good bill for my district. Also, I want to compliment you on the fee being small. I've looked at so many fees this session that have just jumped and tripled and quadrupled. And this is a small fee increase, which I think is certainly answered. And you've done another thing that I think is necessary for my district, and that is you've put on the radar how automobiles are supposed to respond to motorcycles, because we have had fatalities on 101 in my district, and it has been because people have either had the blind spot that they could not see the rider of the motorcycle as a motorist, and of course the narrowness of the road and the narrowness of the shoulders on Highway 101 as well. So I thank you for bringing the bill.
Mr. Chair and Senator Berger, I appreciate those comments tremendously, and you are right. Having grown up in Reedsport, I know the coast is a favorite place, and now that I ride a motorcycle, I love that highway as well. And my husband and I went over to visit my mother-in-law 2 weekends ago when it was sunny, and I lost track of counting how many motorcycles we passed when I got over 100. So, and this weekend is going to be absolutely beautiful, and I'm getting out on my bike because it's been a month, and I'm just itching to get out there. But again, I know that, you know, I have to remember those skills that I learned, and I have to remember to constantly look out for things ahead of me. And those are things that I only learned by taking the class. You cannot learn these things by just hopping on a motorcycle and driving to DMV or riding into DMV and getting your license. You just need that training. And it is an education process for both motorcyclists and for auto drivers, because they are our worst nightmare. Besides our own inadequacies, it is the automobile drivers who are our worst nightmare. Thank you.
Any other questions, Senator? Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
We're in a work session, but I told one gentleman he could come forward. Sir, if you want to come forward. And Troy Costello, would you come forward also, same time, from the department? Welcome.
Oh, thank you. My name is Scott Forrest. I'm a motorcycle safety rider coach, trainer, and instructor certified by the Motorcycle Safety Foundation. And the purpose of this bill is auspicious. I agree. We all want to save lives and train motorcycle riders and manage the risk of riding on our highways. I'm not really opposed to this bill, but Senate Bill 546 will, I think, unjustly harm some citizens as well as the dealerships of the state of Oregon, not to mention the U.S. military here in our state. With unemployment at 12.1%, passage of this bill as written will surely increase unemployment. Any Motorcycle Safety Foundation or MSF instructor employed either by a dealership or as an independent in the state of Oregon will not be able to teach its safety curriculum to its customers or other residents asking for a choice from the state program. The state program is not able to actually issue riding privileges to the military on a national level. The Department of Defense requires an MSF completion card to ride on base, foreign or domestic, and the state program is not an approved MSF course. Yet, it's the only one that would be allowed to train riders recognized by the state. And this would create a monopoly, a monopoly on rider training in the state of Oregon. 47 other states recognize the MSF as a standard of rider education. And ironically, the Department of Transportation here in Oregon and the DMV both use the MSF Alternate Motorcycle Operator Skills Test, or the Alternate MOST, to evaluate motorcycle riders for an endorsement at DMV across the state. Yet those same departments do not recognize the MSF curriculum for state training. They did up until about 5 years ago, but now they use their own curriculum and seem to fight any alternatives. That creates a monopoly. I'm asking for a level playing field, that's all. Because as an MSF instructor, again, I'm in favor of motorcycle safety training. I've literally taught hundreds of students and probably saved lives, as have my colleagues. But my career in the state of Oregon will be over, and my business and employer may be hurt or lost as well. Senate Bill 546, I feel, is a bit unfair to dealerships, MSF instructors, free enterprise for safety training, and unfair for some of the U.S. military in our state, and very unfair to the citizens of Oregon, because I think they deserve a choice.
Thank you, sir. You seem to be indicating that the Department of Transportation, which authorizes education courses, you can't compete for that work. You're not allowed to do an RFP.
Right now,
to
the state program is the only one that is allowed a waiver in the state, except for some in-state military. They accept our waiver. But for the most part, if this bill goes through as written, without amending ORS 802.320 or 807.072, that we're recognized as a credible, nationally certified safety curriculum, it will definitely hurt my employer and my status as an instructor. And I really want to save lives. I've been doing it 16 years. And I think the state program is a wonderful program. I don't want to put them out of business. I just want to be recognized and have a level playing field.
Thank you. Mr. Costales, you want to shed any light on some of the comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Troy Costales, Administrator of the Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. The Motorcycle Safety Foundation, about 3 years ago, approached the state of Oregon and said, we have our beginner rider course curricula. We would like to see it be identified as part of under the discretion that legislation gives to my office for the current beginning operator course within the state of Oregon. Motorcycle Safety Foundation then worked with the Governor Advisory Committee on Motorcycle Safety and the Oregon Traffic Safety Committee on about a year and a half length of hearings talking about the curriculum content, the instructor content, the method of delivery, and the business plan in relationship to the current offering within Oregon to meet or exceed what's currently being offered and being tested and rated as the number one program in the country. After that year and a half, the Governor's Advisory Committee on Motorcycle Safety voted unanimously to not accept the Motorcycle Safety Foundation's base curriculum. And in turn, the Oregon Transportation Safety Committee recommended unanimously not to accept the Motorcycle Safety Foundation's base curriculum as part of the Oregon course. Did not meet or exceed the curriculum content and skill delivery of the operation that's currently in the state of Oregon. So just about 2 years ago, year and a half ago, my note went to the Motorcycle Safety Foundation as the national piece, saying that the Oregon program adopted under statute that Mr. Forrest mentioned is the Team Oregon program. For military, if there is somebody within that's a driver, has a driver license with an endorsement or wants to get an endorsement that's an Oregonian and exists somewhere else around the world, DMV does accept the Motorcycle Safety Foundation card as allowing the Oregonian to submit that and have the endorsement added to their driver license, because that's the course that's taught in other places.
Okay. Any questions for either?
Yes,
Senator Starr.
Thank you for coming. Do your name again.
Scott Forrest.
Mr. Forrest, thank you for the testimony. First, I've heard that there was an alternative. Maybe I missed it in the earlier hearing, but because it's possible. Can you shed a little light on what We just heard from our safety director at the department. What basically caused the breakdown in the negotiation, I guess? What about the MSF,
right, correct.
Program doesn't meet the standard that comes about through the Team Oregon program? What's the problem?
Apparently the laws of physics don't apply in the state of Oregon. I didn't really, I will say I did not see the entire report, only saw a summary of it. Again, the state program, Team Oregon, was MSF for 22 years or thereabouts, and they decided to do their own program, and it is a fine program. I don't know who audits them or majors their safety curriculum other than themselves, but MSF is on a national level, and its record speaks for itself. It's been around for a long, great many years. So,
follow, Mr. Chair.
Please.
So I'm going to say MSF. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that's hard for me to say. That program is something that's taught in other states as the
47 other states,
standard
correct.
Motorcycle training, use training, recognized by DOTs in 47
everywhere.
Other
mm-hmm.
states.
You bet.
And yet we have a program, as Mr. Casales has testified, it's
correct.
Ranked as number one in the nation.
By whom?
By, I'm assuming, NHTSA.
Correct.
National Highway okay. Transportation Safety Administration. You know, not a fly-by-night organization, for sure.
No.
So there's got to be some discrepancy between the two programs, and yet you still have...
And MSF is part of NHTSA, by the way, if you
will. But you still have 47 other states that recognize the program that you're associated
correct.
With. Is the MSF program done, taught through the dealers? Is that how that connection is made?
Currently, there is a dealership in Oregon that allows that program to be taught in this state. And the reason it is not more popular is because the waiver is no longer accepted at the DMV. Otherwise, I'm sure it would be, again, statewide. And just give the citizens a choice.
All right, Mr. Chair, yeah. I think I'd beg for Mr. Casales to give us a little more information about what it is that this program doesn't have, that Team Oregon does, that ultimately doesn't give the opportunity for a choice to the public who is buying motorcycles out there.
Mr. Chair and Senator Starr, two things to add. The reason for the switch to an Oregon-based program was in working with Motorcycle Safety Foundation, states were allowed to identify local needs so they could have, for instance, the Oregon edition of the base program. You could add on to it to say there's certain things going on in Oregon, we want to alter some of these exercises, some of this training based on the dynamics of our state, the riders of our state, the roads of our state. It got to a point in time where the Motorcycle Safety Foundation said, this is our latest version, nobody can alter it. Oregon attempted to work through Motorcycle Safety Foundation through the Team Oregon program and said, we want to concentrate on one of the biggest issues, which is corners and speed. That's the number one issue for motorcycle safety, serious injuries, fatalities in our state, is carrying speed into corners and not coming out of the corners. It's motorcyclists killing themselves. Oregon, through the MSF Cooperative Agreement, requested to have the Oregon edition be allowed. MSF said no. So we were stuck with, do we have a program in our state that is deficient in the area that's of most need, or does Oregon State University go forward and create their own curriculum? The Governor's Advisory Committee on Motorcycle Safety endorsed doing their own curriculum, went forward and have that product today. Motorcycle Safety Foundation was given the opportunity to come back and say, here's where we meet or exceed, or to turn around and allow the MSF curricula to be revised to hit the highlights of what the problems were that we're seeing motorcycles killed or injured in Oregon. And so I would submit to you the biggest difference had to do all about the training and the exercises, about the head and eyes and turns and the speed and turns that is deficient in the beginning curriculum of MSF compared to the curricula that's used for Team Oregon. Currently, just add one side thing, Harley-Davidson uses a derivative of the Motorcycle Safety Foundation course. Harley-Davidson is currently active and also asking for their curricula to be measured up currently with the Oregon. If it was to meet or exceed, the current curriculum of the Motorcycle Safety Committee would look at saying this is an opportunity, an option, and it's actually the course that Mr. Forrest is dealing with. Harley-Davidson directly is currently in negotiation with us to have that derivative compared against the current Oregon standard. So hopefully...
Yeah, just one follow-up, Mr. Chair. Again, this is new information, so I appreciate the opportunity, even though we're in work session. 47 other states, Troy, apparently use this particular program. They don't have corners, and they don't have speed issues in those 47 other states. I mean, they kind of is Oregon that unique? Come on. We have state highways. They're built to, you know, certain codes that are uniform throughout the country. There's corners, and you know these folks ride in every state in the union. Are we that unique that we have to have our own special deal that, you know, something that's pretty much standard in 47 other states doesn't work here?
Mr. Chair and Senator Starr, there is no other alternative for the other states. It is solely the Motorcycle Safety Validation curriculum. There is no other competing curricula in those other states. And so the issue was when trying to negotiate with MSF to make those changes, and they refused to say that Oregon could have an Oregon edition to add those elements, we were stuck with something that was inferior to what our need was, or to look at creating our own curriculum. That's really what it came down to. My concern is just that, is that we were a state-endorsed program that doesn't directly hit the issues that we're seeing for death and injury, unless we added a secondary course and had people to go through it. That's what it really boils down to. States don't have another option. They're in fact not even allowed to use the Oregon curricula if they wanted to, and there are a handful of states that had wanted to do such, and some states did their own studies and said the Oregon curriculum was better. But through a lawsuit by the Motorcycle Safety Foundation, they've locked the Oregon curricula up to only being used in Oregon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator George.
Troy, if you could explain to me, as I understand how the system works, and so maybe I'm misunderstanding it, if you go through Team Oregon, you don't have to go to DMV and take the test. In essence, you're granted the endorsement because you went through the course. But if you go through the MSF course, DMV still gets another shot at those folks to make sure that they actually meet the specifications that you want, having gone through their course, because then you have to then certify them through a skills test. Is that correct? Is that correct interpretation of the situation?
Ms. Chair and Senator George, you're accurate in that someone that takes an alternative course or no course at all would do an on-bike as well as a knowledge skills test at DMV. The individual that takes the Team Oregon course, it's been ruled to meet or exceed the DMV test, so therefore would only have the knowledge side of the test to do at DMV, not the on-bike test.
Okay, thank you.
And then one thing I just want to just make clear for the record, because in statute, meeting this course, which is established by the Department of Transportation, but it's not sole sourced if others meet or exceed that and can apply to be a provider of that course.
Mr. Chair,
just as Team Oregon currently is doing.
Mr. Chair, that's absolutely correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, thank you both. Colleagues, we have a dash two and would be my desire to move that bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 546.
Senator Starr has moved the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 546. Any discussion on the amendment? Any objections to the amendment? So ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move on Senate Bill 546 as amended by the dash twos to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 546 as amended by the dash two amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Chair.
Senator George.
I really struggle with this, and I've talked to the sponsor of the bill a number of times about it. I think we all agree that we would like to have more training of those people who are on motorcycles in the state, and I love the objective of this particular piece of legislation. I just don't necessarily agree with how we're doing it by requiring it. We do have a skills test at the DMV. We do have a knowledge test of the DMV, and it seems like to me we could incentivize it or do something else other than mandates on our citizens, and especially now with this new information. So I'll be voting no, but with a nod to the sponsor that I think her objective is absolutely pure and correct. I just don't necessarily agree with how we're getting there. So I'll be a no.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Thank you. You know, I really wish we'd had the testimony we had today a little earlier. I know we're up against deadlines, and you know we need to move a bill. I support the goals of the bill. I think it's the right direction to head. But I'm frustrated when I have somebody come in and say, "Hey, we passed this bill. It's going to cost Oregon jobs." And we're looking at 12% unemployment in our state. If you've got individuals that are qualified to provide motorcycle training, but for lack of some sort of consistency with a state program, I would just encourage the director of our safety division to work as diligently as he possibly can with any organization in our state that I think shares similar goals of providing safe driving environment for folks that are on motorcycles. I'm not interested in moving a bill out of this committee or across the Senate floor that puts any Oregon jobs in jeopardy. So that worries me. I'm willing to move the bill today, and I would encourage the chair or the sponsor to see if there's a way to navigate this issue that was just kind of at the last minute thrust upon us here. I understand timelines and that kind of thing. So let's move the bill, and let's see if we can negotiate this a little bit better.
Any other comments?
Mr. Chair, I want a clarification probably from you.
Yeah.
And that is that didn't Mr. Gonzalez say that they had requested that they change their training somewhat?
Yes.
and they refused to do so?
Correct.
Thank you, sir.
And I appreciate the comment, Senator Starr. I think but based on the testimony, whatever jobs we didn't quantify or where that necessarily is, are available if someone wants to meet the curriculum to go into business to do that. So, but I share your sensitivities. I think everyone on the committee does. The clerk, call the roll.
Senator George.
No.
Senator
Craig.
Aye. Senator
Berger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Starr.
Aye.
Chair
Messer. Aye. Senate Bill 546 is passed, and Senator Walker, I think, probably would like to carry the bill, do you think?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Close the work session on Senate Bill 546 and open a work session on Senate Bill 689. Mr. Stembridge.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 689 directs the Oregon Department of Transportation to provide incentives for the voluntary removal of outdoor advertising signs from scenic byways. You heard this in March, on March 26th. You have the Dash 1 and the Dash 2 amendments. The Dash 1 changes the combination of relocation credits to include signs of 249 square feet. The Dash 2 adds the definition for relocation permit. We also distributed today a Dash 4, which replaces the measure. It makes future relocation credits created due to sign removal available to any person first come, first served. It also provides that current location credits remain valid subject to annual renewal. That amendment came relatively recently, so we do not have the fiscal and revenue on that, but we do have fiscal and revenue impact statements on the Dash 1 and the Dash 2. You have minimal expenditure impacts on both and no revenue impact on the Dash 1 and the Dash 2.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Stembridge. And colleagues, you know, it would be my intent to move the Dash 1 and Dash 2, which are technical amendments to what is the consensus bill that we've heard. I am going to permit a discussion of the Dash 4 amendment. And so if the proponent would like to come forward and talk to you about that.
Thank you, Chair Metzger. Members of the committee, my name is Chris Doherty. I'm with Icon Group. Do I need to restate my address?
No, you don't need your address.
Okay. The Dash 4 amendments are a way to address the relocation credit issue that we have been speaking about, looking at it from a prospective standpoint. What this says is that from the effective date of this bill forward, any owner of a sign that would choose to voluntarily remove their sign and terminate their lease with a landowner, that particular relocation credit would be created by the department, held by the department, and then available for use by any person that would have an otherwise legal location to relocate a sign. That's a bit different than the existing situation with relocation credits, wherein the relocation credits are issued to the sign owner and held by the sign owner, renewable annually for the purpose of excluding those credits from being utilized by anyone else.
Okay, so then under this, so if someone, a billboard disappeared, that would, they would get a credit, but this one would have a shelf life of a year.
Nothing would change. I'm sorry, Senator Metzger. Nothing would change under the current system of how we track removed signs. What would happen is, rather than issuing a relocation credit to a specific party to be held by that specific party, the department would now hold all relocation credits. And then any person that had a lease with the landowner and a local permit could present an application to the department to utilize that relocation credit.
All right, so
all the existing credits that exist as of the date of this bill remain with those persons that currently hold them, and they can utilize those credits as before.
Right, but when the billboard goes down, the owner of that billboard no longer owns that credit.
They have every right to utilize that credit just as they did before.
Not solely, though.
They could not exclude every other person from utilizing it.
Right. Okay. Any questions for Mr. Doherty? And I'll leave him up here for a second. I want Phil Schrader to come forward. But. Okay. Mr. Schrader, will you come forward, Department of Justice? If you state your name for record, and we'd be interested in just your legal analysis of the Dash 4.
Sure. Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Philip Schradl, Chief Counsel, General Counsel Division with the Attorney General's Office. At the outset, I want to make sure that everybody knows the department doesn't have a position with respect to the bill as a policy matter. My comments, really, I want to focus on the Dash 4 amendments. Those are different than the Dash 3s that we heard the last time we were here. And the way they're different, I think Mr. Doherty did accurately describe that what would happen is that if a sign were taken down now, the relocation credit associated with that sign would stay with the permit holder whose sign that was. The Dash 4 amendments would, for after the effective date of the statute, would then mean that went into essentially a pool that anybody could apply for, including the sign permit holder. The legal analysis that I can give to you, unfortunately, is very, very, very amorphous because there are no cases that are anywhere close to such a circumstance. There are some cases out there that talk about permits, and permits in general would not be seen to be a property interest to which constitutional takings analysis would apply. But those aren't in the circumstance where you have a cap associated with that, so that there is a scarce resource, that is, the number of permits that are available. And the difficulty here is in trying to determine whether a court, in looking at this, would look at the sign permit and the relocation credit that currently under statute is associated with that sign permit as a bundle of property rights in toto, or whether they would kind of separate them out. And under the Dash 4 amendments, those would be separated out so that the relocation credits would be dealt with totally differently than the sign permit. I could believe, and I believe a court would at least give credence to, an argument that it's a bundle of rights the current sign permit holder has under the statute that also has associated with it the relocation credits, and there is value associated with those relocation credits. And I could understand that a court could well determine that that is a property right that this amendment would then eliminate for the current sign permit holder. I can't give you an analysis that says dispositively that a court would find one way or the other. I think it is an open question because the courts haven't addressed it. As I said before, I think there is substantial risk that a court could find that it would effectuate a taking. These Dash 4 amendments have less risk associated with them than the Dash 3 amendments did because it looks forward on just a prospective basis. But I think there still is some risk associated with that a court could find that it's an unconstitutional taking. And that doesn't mean that the state can't do it. It would mean that simply the state has to compensate for the elimination of that relocation credit.
Thank you for your analysis. Any questions for either folks? Senator Starr.
No questions.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator George.
The way I've kind of rationalize this in my mind is it's similar to a situation like with patents. We as a country, actually internationally now, issue people patents upon which they have a property right in that patent where they have exclusive right to use that idea that they've patented for X number of years. and then we put an end to their property right in that patent right. It seems like to me this is very similar of a situation. In essence, people have invested in a certain right that they have, and it seems like to me that they've that there is a property right. I mean, I think a tort would look at it like having a property right, but then it was sort of my mind, at some point there's an overriding public interest in having a timeline on that property right. So that, I was just wondering if you could make a comment whether you think I'm going down the right legal path or not.
Chair Metzger, Senator George. No, I think I agree with how you view patents. When you apply for and get a patent, you have that with a timeline that expires. So going into the entire process, you have an expiration date associated with that patent. In the meantime, you do have an exclusive right. And the hard part with this idea here with the signed permits and the relocation credits is that there are many permit holders right now who have these permits with the understanding under the current statutory regime that the relocation credits associated with them don't have an expiration date. You can change that on a prospective basis, but it's a little unclear as to whether it would be viewed as just the issuance of a new relocation credit or whether the court would look at it as, no, it's associated with the signed permit that already was in existence. And that's where I think the real difficulty comes in trying to predict how a court would decide whether that relocation credit, which is newly created after the effective date of the statute, whether that can, you know, does it relate back to the signed permit to which it was originally attached or not? So that's the difficulty in kind of trying to prognosticate.
Gotcha. Thank you very much.
Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Schroeder, for being here. Your response to Senator George prompted a question, though. I mean, if the reality is that these folks have to come back and renew that permit every year. I mean, it's a one-year permit. Is that correct? I mean, it's a one-year deal. So to think that just goes on for perpetuity forever and ever begs the question of, if that's the case, why the heck do they have to come back every year and get permission to re-up the permit? That doesn't make sense.
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, that would be an argument that somebody would present as to why that doesn't go forward. Under the current existing statutory scheme, however, as long as you pay that renewal fee, you're entitled to retain your relocation credit. It's simply an administrative process for administering the fees that the Department of Transportation needs to maintain the entire signed permit program. It's different than needing to make some kind of a qualification standard that you need to establish or to satisfy in order to retain it. All you simply need to do is the ministerial task of renewal fee. It's certainly an argument, however, as to why they would expire or extinguish.
I mean, Mr. Chair, I mean, it goes to say, I mean, I've always been told your right to drive is a privilege, not a right. I mean, it's because you have this whole driver's license. I mean, it's seems to me that when you have a permit that requires a renewal, that's different than this perpetual right to have this credit forever and ever.
And Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, yes, and it's even, well, the complexity that I was just thinking in my head was that then how the evaluation or the valuation of these relocation credits are very, very difficult matters because they come along with a number of restrictions. First, you need to be able to satisfy all of the local zoning ordinances or whatever. They have mile radiuses that are limitations on where those relocation credits can be utilized. So the valuation process would be very difficult to try and figure out, but the mere fact that you have to renew them, I don't think is dispositive of whether or not it's a property interest that the court would find is compensable or not.
Mr. Chair, this is one of those, be careful what you wish for, the law of unintended consequences. Sometime back when this thing was created, now we're in this situation where our hands are tied to a certain extent. So,
yeah, that's a very good point, and I made a comment a few times that we unintentionally create value and limitations, and I've referenced this before, similar to the gill netting permits that we gave 100 years ago, and there's only so many of them, and they own them, and if you want to get rid of gill netting, you have to deal with the issue of the property right of a very limited resource that is not accessible to anyone else, and water rights. I mean, you know, we do all these things for a reason, but we then create a property right situation, and someday we'll have to figure out how we meet our public policy purposes without, you know, creating something that someone has and someone else can't get. But it's very difficult. Any other questions? We're going to take about a 3-minute recess, and then we're going to come back for our vote because we have a member that needs to have a discussion. So we're going to be in recess for 3 minutes.
Thank you.
The Senate Committee on Business and Transportation, and see, we were in work session on 689, and I would prefer a dash 1 and dash 2.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 689.
Senator Starr has moved dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 689. Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 689.
Senator Starr has moved the dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 689. Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended by the dash 1 and the dash 2 amendments to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 689 as amended by the dash 1 and 2 amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion. I don't think we're going to be done with this issue, but for today we're going to be done with this bill.
You want to
Oh, we want to take a... Is there any objection to 689? All right. It has been passed. I'll carry. And Mr. Stembridge, why don't you tell us a little bit about next week's... everything, before I do that, is a couple of things. Is we are posting everything that for bills that we will be moving are going to be posted today, or, you know, so you can see. I will tell you that they have been posted, so you can see that. Some bills, if you have questions about them, not necessarily the content in the bill is always going to be the one that we will be hearing, though. So if you have any questions, you know, feel free to contact the staff. And on that same note, before I go to where we're going to go next week, is this is... So sad to say. Erin Seiler's last day with the committee. And she's, well, someone said she got promoted to another committee. I said, I don't know how you get promoted from this committee. I mean, this is, but she is moving to the Rules Committee, so she still has to put up with me. But she will be leaving us. So thank you for all your help, Erin.
Well, Mr. Chairman, she's going to be the committee administrator in Rules as well.
Yeah, so...
Well, that is technically a promotion.
Yeah.
Very technical.
Going to be in the building.
But we still got Jim.
Only technically, though.
Okay, so Monday, Mr. Stammer?
Well, we have about a dozen bills left in the committee that are on our active list, and about half of them are on Monday, and the other half are on Wednesday. So.
And then we will roll over anything that we want to do that we, for some reason we don't have a fiscal or we have to carry over. We'll just roll those over until we get our work done. Thank you, Alder. Yes, Senator.
I'm just a little concerned about the schedule of the ways and means that are going to be out on the road. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to miss any of these meetings.
When are you out on the road?
We start out on the road not next week, but the following week that we'll be going some distances and may be leaving earlier in the day.
Okay.
Next week we're going to be on the road, but we're going in the evenings and returning to Salem.
And we shouldn't have any problems since we'll be at 1 o'clock next, and we'll have everything done next
week. So I think that will work, but the following week I need to be a little concerned about it.
Well, we'll be in House bills then, and we'll kind of look at, I'll have a reminder, Mr. Stembridge, so we'll work with Senator Verger on the scheduling for House bills that week. And
okay, that would be really appreciated. I thank you so much.
We'll do that. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.